Today's episode of Absurdity is sponsored by The Haystack. The Haystack is a voice for young adults in the Seventh-day Adventist Church that produces articles, music reviews, videos, and more. To check them out, go to www.thehaystack.org. The Haystack, life, culture, theology. Hey guys, welcome back to Absurdity. And just before we jump in here, I want to be really clear that the official episode or name and title of this episode is what you see in iTunes, but the real title of this episode is Ryan Goes to the World Series and Sees the Dodgers Play in the World Series Before Tony Does and Roots Against Them.
I hate you so much right now. You have no idea how much hatred is in my heart for you.
Bro, you know what was crazy to me? At one point, A-Rod walked by us.
No way.
A-Rod, seriously? Yeah, A-Rod was at a Red Sox World Series game, which is just...
I bet, because I think he does recording for ESPN or something.
Oh, yeah. So, it was just strange to see happen. Like, it was very odd.
No.
But no, the game was amazing. So I did go to a World Series game on Tuesday, game one of the Red Sox versus Dodgers, which, to be fair, I'm not like a diehard baseball fan. I don't really follow it that much.
He really is not. No.
Like, I care about it, but I don't care about it. So,
you're up to date. Like, you knew it was the World Series and who was playing in it, but you're not like, you don't care about the players.
No, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, I guess now, like, I don't really know that I have a choice here, so I guess I'm admitting this publicly, but I guess now I'm a Red Sox fan because I just dropped, like, $600 to go watch them play.
I hate you so much.
So I don't really, like, in game one of the World Series in Boston, in Fenway Park, like, I don't... Oh, dude, we were saying that all night long, and it was so relevant, and it was great.
Well, here's the thing, though. It wasn't just that you saw the Red Sox. You saw the Red Sox in the World Series in Boston.
Game one. I mean? So it's like, they won.
If you were going to choose a team, you should still choose the Dodgers. But, like, I can get why you would... like start rooting for the Red Sox for that reason. Be like, yeah, no, I can kind of, yeah.
Now here's what's really important that you know, which is here's why I went to the World Series. The night before, the day before, I went to Chipotle in New York City, and people got mad at me because why are you in New York City eating Chipotle instead of something local? To which I responded, I have a bucket list item of eating Chipotle in all 50 states. Don't at me on my Instagram story. Tony added me. Literally, all he did was send me an at sign.
Send the at sign. Yeah, the aspersand. No, not aspersand is and.
The at sign. Yeah, it's the just at, yeah. And so, I told him don't at me. I literally warned you what would happen. I said don't at me, and you added me, so I had to go to the World Series game and take a picture and watch your Dodgers lose. It was great.
Was that before or after?
What? No, it was before. You sent me that before.
Okay.
Because I distinctly remember looking at Rick and going...
Yeah, no, it was.
Yeah, going, I want to respond to this at sign so badly, but I think responding to it tomorrow when we're at the game is going to be even better.
Hear me, for I have spoken, Absurdity. Ryan Becker is not on my fun list. This is going to be every time. Here's what we'll do. We're talking about something kind of serious-ish. Literally, anytime you talk to me, I'm going to start with, screw you, Ryan, and then I'm going to jump into it. So we're just making that agreement between ourselves right now.
All right.
That's how this episode's going to go down.
I've earned
it. And after this, I will have closure.
That's fine.
Yeah,
I agree. All right. So two quick things before we jump into the main kind of gist and meat of this episode. The first thing I've been meaning to put this in last episodes, but I keep forgetting to record it separately. But December 28th through 30 in Charlotte, North Carolina, there is Awaken Conference for young adults, and it's open to the entire NAD. This isn't like a Carolina conference thing. I'm part of the development team for it and the planning team, but I'm also doing a seminar on living in a post-Christian world. So if you are interested in going to Awaken Conference, go to awakennc.com. And you can sign up, you can register there. It is like an official conference, so you'll have to book your own lodging and your own travel, stuff like that. Like, it's not like a summer camp. It's not like your typical Adventist thing, but it is an Adventist event. So awakennc.com, December 28th through 30 in Charlotte, North Carolina. The second thing I want to do, this is kind of the last thing that we're going to talk about GC-wise for a bit, but I really want to be like annual council wise. But there's one thing that I forgot to bring up last episode that I think is really important for us too. And it is this. There was a moment on Sabbath morning at annual council where Ted Wilson minimized social justice in its relationship to the gospel. Now, there was a large outburst reaction to that. Myron Edmonds actually led the pack in that, calling for the regional conference presidents to speak up against this. And they did. The regional conference actually wrote, they prepared a statement, all nine presidents together prepared a statement and sent it to Ted Wilson. And before annual council was over, Ted Wilson actually sat down with all nine of them and heard them out and not only apologized to them, but then made sure to correct his statement on the live stream from up front. I have said a lot of things on this show, but that I respect so much. And it would be completely unfair and unjust for me not to say something positive and something and really acknowledge just how great what he did in that moment is, because that was great leadership from him. And I can definitely get behind that. I just really wanted to be fair in my representation there of this issue of the greater kind of context going on with our leadership and wanted to bring that up.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it changes anything we said previously.
Oh, no.
But it definitely gives good context. I kind of want to hear that. This is the first time hearing about it. I really want to hear what he said. Because, yeah, I mean, it's just indefensible what he was saying. If he died on the hill of, no, I meant what I said, that's just indefensible. But if he's like, no, let me clarify. I think that's
yeah. Well, I do wish he had been a little bit more clear when he clarified it, but I'm not going to, beggars can't be choosers on this one. Like I'm thankful for any steps in that direction for now.
It shows where his heart was at. I think that helps a lot. But again, for me, I just, the lack of awareness, cause I go back to one of the things we harped on was this lack of awareness. And I'm like, the fact that you apologize afterwards is great. Once you were made aware of the problem, I go, but the fact that you didn't see it as it came up goes, okay, there's a big blind spot here.
Absolutely.
Giant gaping drive a semi truck through it blind spot.
Oh, anyway, are you describing the way the Dodgers play outfield?
It's neither here nor there. That is neither here nor there. Hear me, for I have spoken absurdity.
Are you talking about the strike zone of any given Dodger player? Is that what you're talking about? A hole so big you could just drive a semi through it? I love that I have this over you for the rest of my life until you go see Dodger.
Well, hold on. You have the game, but for the record, they did win last night. So I didn't watch it because it was Friday night, but they won in 18 innings. So if the Dodgers win the series, it's going to hurt a lot less.
That's fair. But I still saw them play and lose.
But you still saw them play. and I've been to like 200 games. It's not like I've never stepped up. Like, I've been to Dodger Stadium more than I've been to the GC. Like, do you understand? You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, Dodger Stadium is like a second church for me. It's a cathedral, you know?
Yeah.
Like, it's just this gorgeous, beautiful thing that I've had all these amazing memories at. And so for you to see the Dodgers in a World Series before me is tantamount to like
betrayal. Like, it's like dating
an
ex.
It's why John Calvin
you.
Can't be right. Like, to me, it changes my theology. Like, I could not be like, God cannot control everything in the universe if that happens. Like, there's no way that both of us are in the elect and you get, you know what I mean? Like, it
yeah,
just,
no, I fit.
There's
fair.
Certain things
that's
I can't
fair.
Accept.
That's fair.
I have to be Arminius now. I have, in case I wasn't before, I am now. By the way, I have to also give a quick shout out. My pastor here at the church that we're working at in Andrews gave a sermon, and you can tell he did his prep work because everything he was describing, but in the moment he kind of, you know, some preachers get nervous in the moment and they kind of like mess things up. He forgot Arminius's name, who he was. And so he goes, Joseph Arminius. And I literally texted one of the other pastors. I'm like, who the heck is Joseph Arminius?
Nice.
He's a weird cousin it's Jacob Arminius is the guy we follow. But I thought it was just close. Hilarious. Because then he's like, yeah, Calvin was French. And this guy was, and I'm like, so Calvin was Swiss. Joseph Arminius might have been.
We don't know. We don't know
Dutch.
A lot about
we don't
him.
Know. We don't know. Jacob Arminius was Dutch for sure. Yeah.
So let's jump into the meat of today's episode.
Let's do it.
10 minutes, now that we're 10 minutes into the episode.
I feel like it's good we're stalling so much.
A lot of this was good to talk about, so I don't feel terrible about it. But sorry to those who are like, just get to it already, as I'm now still not getting to it. We're recording this on October 27, 2018, and if you haven't checked the news between then and when you're hearing this, then you probably don't know about the shooting in Pittsburgh that happened on Saturday morning, or I guess as we're recording this today, literally earlier today. But in Pittsburgh, there was a shooting. I'm not going to identify the gunman on this show. I don't think that that is helpful. I don't think it's good. That's not someone that I want to at all cement the legacy of, with by making their name publicized.
Don't give them attention.
Yeah. But, 11 people, at least 11 were dead, including, and some cops were shot. I actually don't know. 3 cops were shot. And I don't know. I don't think they died. I think it's only people in the church, or in the synagogue. I'm sorry. And what's different, what I find interesting about this one is that the gunman, it feels so terrible to be saying this one, like this shooting, as if it's like such a casual thing now. But I find it interesting that he surrendered, and I'm actually glad that he surrendered to police at some point, like that he's in custody. The reason being, I know we've talked about mental illness and suicide on this show before, all right? And I know we've talked about suicide, and I've talked about it from the perspective of it being something that you die from rather than, you know, willingly take your own life. But I don't know that that applies to, I don't know that I apply that logic to the case of mass murderers who then kill themselves right after, so they never have to really face consequences. And I like that. It just, that has always bugged me. So I'm actually really glad that he's going to have to face the consequences of his actions, here on this earth as well, you know, as well as, at judgment. So
in the world to come,
for me, like that is kind of a big deal. I'm glad about that. And I know I just said the words mental health. And so hear me very carefully on this, Tony. I don't know if you agree with me. I guess we can find out. But hear me very clearly on this, I'm not going to say that another white shooter in America is the result of our mental health crisis or mental illness crisis. That is not like, I'm not going to say that because it's not what it is. Like this is an act of terror. This is an act of insane violence. And this is not like, I'm sorry, you don't get to, we don't get to talk about terrorism in general. And then when it's just a white guy in America, we say, oh, he was just, you know, a troubled human being. I don't know that we can get away with that, and I don't want to get away with that. So I'm not okay with that, and I'm not going to say. I think I've said my piece on that for now, but
I don't like politicizing this stuff. I think both sides, for obvious reasons, want to use it to further their agenda, whether you agree with that agenda or not. To me, I think it just proves that we have a lot of things that we can still fix. And I think we just need to go in and fix them instead of talking about them and blaming, like, just, okay, well then fix it. Like, go and fix it.
He says, talking about it on a podcast.
Yeah, but I am going to go vote and fix it. So,
Fair.
Yeah, like I think that's, one of the guys on a podcast I follow called Men in Blazers had a great phrase about this. And he goes, you know, it's just terrible. This is a terrible event. We need to love. We just need to love. Love needs to win out. Love and vote. And some people give him flack for that. They're like, why are you making it political? You know, he goes, no. You need to love and vote. Do something. That's how we as a common citizen, beyond reaching out and affecting change on a broader scale, that's what anyone without any political training or anything like that, you can go and vote. And so just get out, do it, go. If you're a millennial, if you are under 30, go vote.
Yep.
Just do it.
I agree. I have to get I need to get my license updated for Tennessee now that I live here. I still haven't done it because I lost my Social Security card at one point. And literally just got it back today. I just got a new one today.
Oh, that's crazy.
So I have to go get my license on Monday at the DMV. And I'm hoping that by officially becoming a Tennessee resident, I can, I'll be able to vote in time.
Yeah,
Be able to. But yeah,
I got to be honest. I'm trying to find out if I can vote in the Texas primaries or the Texas midterms, because I really want to vote for Beto. This is the only time I will do this. And it's specifically because we're talking about this shooting, and I don't want to make it political. I love the way that he is running. I love the way he's doing it.
He just earned a third major newspaper endorsement in Texas.
This is a guy that is going out and doing the work that needs to be done. You know, he's not I've met Ted Cruz. I've seen him speak in person. I have nothing against the guy personally. Like, I don't know him as a person, but as a political figure, I can say I do not believe he has the common good for Texans at heart. I think he understands them as far as the trope that they are. So he speaks the language that they want to hear, but I don't think he actually knows them or really cares about them.
Yeah, that's fair.
And he's not a native Texan. I mean, that's the other thing that cracks me up about all this is like, yeah, he may have grown up, but he's not a native Texan. And that's a huge thing.
In Texas.
For Texans. Yeah. And so I just think it's one of those things that I really want to go vote for him personally, because I just see the guy and I just go, you know, there might be a lot of things wrong in this country, but every once in a while someone comes in and gives you hope. And I look at this young dude. I see him and I get why JFK was so popular. Like, I see him and I go, here he is. He's actually going out. He's convincing people they can be better. He's saying things, not just that people want to hear, but like reality. Now, if he goes out and screws that up and doesn't actually follow through with anything, then I'll be like, oh, all right, well, I'm disappointed. But like, I definitely, like, to me, I'm like, oh, I never understood how JFK could be so popular. Like, I never got that growing up, because I didn't see any, you know, I somewhat saw that with Obama, but with Beto especially, like, I see his, because I didn't really see Obama do the grassroots as much. I didn't pay as much attention. Now I'm really seeing it, and I'm just like, I'm visualizing and going like, no, totally. He's this young guy, you know, he was in a rock band. He can skateboard. He goes and just like meets people. He's like, hey, this is Bob. Like, Bob works here. Like, he wants this. And you just don't see that on the other side. And so I really want to go vote for him. The point being, I don't like politicizing things like that, because this is a tragedy. And one of the things, and we can start to talk about kind of how we should respond to it as a church and as Christians, but the fact that we as a nation accept, because this is coming on the heels, and let me explain so that you can understand what I'm about to say to contextualize it. This is coming on the heels of another cis white male trying to enter a place of worship and instead going to a Walmart nearby and shooting two people of color, specifically Black African Americans. This is coming on the heels of it. I am disturbed by how readily we simply accept mass murder and violence on a scale like this and are not incensed by it. It scares me. Because if something like this had happened, I mean, the 1800s were crazy. Like, people, they diminish how crazy the 1800s were, but people weren't aware of it. To a degree, you heard outlandish stories. So the violence was there, but we just didn't see it. But whenever we would hear something about, like, oh, a family was, you know, killed and you know, cut off by the Comanches or whatever, like, there was this insane amount of like, we can't let this happen. And this, how dare, you know, children have to, and now to simply see it accepted so readily. And granted, there were overtones of racism and, you know, the Indians are coming to get your family or whatever. But it was like, it's like the fact that we can't as a nation just sit back and realize this is, we need to fix something.
Yeah.
It needs to be fixed, you know, whether it's mental health regulations, whether it's just a better background check for guns, whether it's, you know, whatever it is that we need to do, we need to fix something, because we can't simply sit back and accept it. Because, I mean, 2018 has been ridiculous with the amount of mass shootings. I mean, it has been ridiculous. And I thought 2017 was bad. This has been ridiculous, and we need to accept it. We need to, as a nation. Now, that's the secular side of it. So when I see that 14 people were attacked in a Jewish synagogue and the guy was screaming, now again, all the reports haven't come in. you know, we may have to do an update episode and go back. But from what I can see, and I was following it very steadily, unfortunately at the cost of my pastor's sermon, which was why it was ironic that I could still, that's why I remember the Joseph Arminius, because I was like looking up from my phone being like, huh, what? What did he just say?
Wait a minute.
This guy's shooting people, but that caught my attention. But like the reality is like I was following that all day because I'm like, this just can't happen again, you know? And he's apparently, he was screaming, you know, like Jews need to die. And you look on his website and he's like, yeah, Jews are the devil of the children. And here's the other thing that just gets me and just drives me up a wall. Christians who do not understand Jesus at all. Do not understand Jesus at all. So apparently on this guy's Facebook or something, he had his quote from John 8 something, and it said, Jews are the children of the devil. And I wanted to respond to this guy. Now, Facebook, I will admit, is where stupid has decided to make its home. So I don't comment on Facebook anymore. I don't respond to comments on Facebook anymore. I rarely respond to trolls on Twitter. Every once in a while, Instagram, I'll kind of, but I rarely respond to anything on the internet anymore. However, I would want to talk to this guy and be like, you know that was written by a Jew, right? Talking, yeah. Quoting another Jew, correct? Like, you are aware of that fact that they're like, Jews are the children of the devil, except for these particular good ones. Like, no, like that's, anyway.
Nope.
It disturbs me when people don't understand how Jesus works. He's like, I just want you to love everybody. Yeah, except for those guys, right? We can kill them. We can totally murder the mess out of them. No, it's not. When I said everybody, yeah, but you didn't mean them though, right? Because that, like, it just drives me up a wall. And then we have our president, God bless him, toting God bless everyone, God bless all, or something to that effect. Like, God bless all. No. God bless the Jews who were killed today. You can name them. Your son-in-law is one. You,
yeah.
Words I can't say because it's still the fringe of the Sabbath. Okay,
but can I have a counterpoint to the vote thing?
All right, hit me.
And it's not. I'm not trying to say we shouldn't vote. All right. So before anyone like turns this off, my thing is like there.
I tweeted that out.
The thanks.
Ryan says don't vote.
So. I wonder, this is kind of a thought experiment. I haven't given it much thought outside of like you talking about it today has made me
Let's do this.
First time I've thought about it. But the whole thing about people calling for, you know, everyone should vote. You should get out and vote, make a difference, and your vote matters. And okay, fair. Absolutely agree. You should get out and vote and things. But the people that are saying that, right? Like the people that I hear saying that, and granted, I hear conservatives saying it too, but like I'm talking mostly on the left right now. People who are voting because they want to swing the House, the Senate, presidency, you name it, and bring balance back, whatever. They're kind of hinging on the assumption that the people who aren't voting are the people that will, like, that will put the people that they want in. Like, so there's this weird thing of go vote, but I'm also secretly hoping that you vote for my guy or you know, the things that I want. And, like, that could be a double-edged sword. So like we talk about 2016 and the elections that Trump won, and we're sitting there like people didn't vote. Like, no, people voted. And we have Trump. You know what I mean? Like, at some point people are voting. Granted, always more people can vote, but I just worry that it's kind of a double-edged sword.
I agree.
Because
it's just this
vague, like nebulous idea of go vote.
Your I think vote, it's a matter of. Right. I'm with you. Go vote. And these, you know, in parentheses for me or for my guy. I agree with that. But
or
I think
girl.
The other thing is just go let your guy is a gender neutral term now. So please don't correct me.
I will absolutely correct you.
You're assuming that guy is binary.
You should go back to our episode with Anna Bennett, where she talks about calling people friends instead of guys.
And, yeah. No, that was a great one. Vote for my friend. I sound so weird coming out.
Don't call me pal.
Go vote for my
buddy.
Person. I would be more okay if they said, go vote for my person. Go vote for the, you know, my person.
Go vote for the human being that I want to win.
Yeah, we should just vote robots in. Let's just accept it. I keep seeing these AI commercials everywhere. Like, are you like, I feel like I'm taking crazy pills. Is it just me?
My thing is, I feel like
so many commercials for like artificial intelligence out there now, and I'm like, did the 80s teach us nothing?
My thing with AI is like, I know this is way off topic now. My thing with AI is I think the Turing test is getting easier, not because AI is getting better, not because AI is getting better.
No,
because we're getting dumber.
Humans are getting stupider. Like, it is so, like, honestly, I would be somewhat okay with I'm not comfortable with it, but I can kind of get why you would want like a robotic Supreme Court. You know what I mean? They would just look at how society has morphed and changed and just been like, we have determined that there's an 86% that this law will be, you know, overturned within 32 years. So we will overturn it now. Like, I'm kind of okay with that at this point, where it's just like, let's just, they're doing a better job than us. And I'm like, that's how they're going to take over. That's how, not Netgear. What was it? Skynet. That's how Skynet's going to get it done. Anyway,
back to voting, wanting my person to win.
Vote for, in parentheses, my person. To a degree, that is true. I think the bigger issue is go out and make your voice heard. I think that is the most important thing you can do. And I do think to a large degree, millennials and younger persons tend to be progressive. And so they will vote for people who will make a change on either side of the coin. So people like Mitch McConnell and you know, these just old white guys, you know, in the White House that determine for the rest of the nation what is and is not okay language to use and what isn't. Anyway, they will be moved over because you'll have more progressive people who will sit there and be like, well, I grew up in a predominantly black neighborhood. I enjoy black people. Why are we making, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Gerrymandering's still a real thing. Like, these things that you would think would be in the past, this stuff that sounds like it's a third world. I mean, look at the situation in Georgia. I mean, that's a third world level. Like, we joke about it in the way, in case you don't know what's happening in Georgia. It's just taking a weird political turn, but let's do this. You know what? Especially talking about annual council. In Georgia right now, the guy who's in charge of deciding who is eligible to vote is also the guy who is running for office that is being voted for. So he has purged, and I have heard anywhere from like 40,000 to 340,000 people from the rolls.
Yeah, I've heard that as well.
And I'm like, regardless of if he purged 8 people from the rolls, that is a huge violation of ethics. I mean, talk to any ethical professor. If I'm in charge of who votes for me, I mean, that's literally step one in a dictatorship. Step one in dictatorship, make sure you get voted for life, but give the illusion that people can choose someone else, right? Where they get like 98% of the vote and the 2% are like, yeah, those are just people. They 100 would look bad is basically the assumption. And it's what cracks me up. It's literally what cracks me up is because I'm like, this is third world. If we see this in another country, if that happened in Haiti and they were like the governor of this Haiti, we would be like, what the heck? That could never happen in our beautiful country. And it's still happening. And so when I say go out and vote, go make your voice heard. That's what's important. And that, I think, is the issue in the GC right now.
Okay, I'm going to pull this picture up. We're back on the GC. I don't even care. I just saw this picture today. It is a graph of the Adventist Church membership as of 2013, and then our delegates by the numbers.
Who did that?
I don't know who did that. Spectrum is the one who shared it.
Of course they did.
And then, but
how,
like, these are
they not sponsoring us?
But these
we need to, Spectrum. But if you were listening to us,
but like, here's the thing: like, this is even
money.
If you think Spectrum's biased, fine.
We want to promote,
but
you.
these are just numbers.
These are numbers.
These are just numbers. All right.
Like, to me, again, I go back to the, like, forget what they are trying to say with them. The fact that the Adventist Review wasn't the one to punch these out should tell you something.
Yeah.
The fact that it has to be Spectrum to just be like, here are the numbers. Like,
yeah. Okay. So let me give you some examples of this. All right.
Let's do
this. World Church membership in 2013 was 57% female, 43% male. In San Antonio, our representation was 83% male, 17% female. And at the nominating committee for San Antonio,
it's got to be worse,
was 13.5% female and 86.5% male.
Yep, yep.
Now here's the kicker. You're going to love this. The percentage of our total members that are under 30 in 2013.
I can already feel it.
45%.
No way.
45% under 30.
That's huge.
30 to 39, 17%. 40 to 49, 13%. 50 to 59, 10%. All right, ready?
Yeah. Oh, this is worldwide.
Yeah, this is worldwide. Yeah. 18 million members, 75,000 churches. All right. San Antonio 25, delegates by the numbers. Under 30, we went from 45% total membership to 6% representation.
Stop.
30 to 39, 17% total membership, 10% delegates. 40 to 49, 13% membership, 26% delegates.
This is where it's going
to
be
50
good.
To 59, 50 to 59, 10% membership. So 10% of our total World Church membership.
Yeah.
35%
yeah.
of our delegates. 60 to 69, 7%, 19% delegates.
Do they have male female cuts?
No, not by each number.
Well, you know that. I mean, you know that in San Antonio it was only 17%, but I'd be interested to see how many of them were younger or how many were older.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's just ridiculous.
It
really is. And it just goes back to It goes back to this idea of this horrible shooting has happened. I guess it's good to draw a parallel. The horrible shooting happened, and you look at how current leadership right now in this country reacted to it, and it reacted to it in a way that reveals a lack of awareness. And that is so scary, because our church leadership is revealing that same lack of awareness.
Okay, so then, like,
it's not that hard, man.
I think this is going to be the theme of this kind of episode, because it is about the original intent of this episode was to talk about the mission of the church. So why don't we do that for the next 30 minutes? Because this does segue.
I think that works.
This segues in.
Lack of awareness.
The solution to all of this. Let me be 100% clear here. In my mind, the solution to all of this is boots on the ground work.
I'm so glad you didn't say killing virgins on a pyramid, because I thought that's where you were going. And I'm like, dude, that's been done. Didn't work. But yeah, boots on the ground. That's way better.
Boots on the ground work. I'm just going to let what you said be what it is.
grassroots. I'm with you. Seriously.
Literally,
I'm
like 100%. The way there is no policy. Let me be 100% clear. I'm not saying I want to be a delegate, though I would, given how much outspoken I am on this, right?
We're not even, well, yeah.
There is no policy
younger
in place that keeps Tony or myself from being the GC president.
Nope.
There is no policy in place, which is also.
You have to be 30, though? Well, I think maybe
do you have
age.
To be 30? Okay, maybe
I think
age.
You have
but
to
like,
be 30.
Here's my point. Any general member, there's no policy in place that keeps being that role.
It's like technically any Catholic, technically any person on earth can be elected pope.
Yeah. I think my dog should be the pope.
Technically, she'd be a great pope.
Pope Sugar. So
I think she'd handle the pedophile issue a lot better than currently.
Oh, absolutely. So she'll bark them out of their jobs.
Sugarius the Eighth.
So I like boots on the ground work, getting involved locally wherever you are, right? That's why the answer to the political stuff is vote. Vote the people that suck out and vote the people that don't suck in. It's what you do in your daily life. To begin with, right? Like, so all these guys that are out committing acts of terrorism, right? Like, we do this thing on Facebook because we're so sick of dialogue, or we're so sick of like speech we hate. We do it on Twitter too. We block people we disagree with, or we just hide them from our timeline so we don't have to see their stuff. Instead of actually like building relationships with people and actually dialoguing with them and acknowledging their feelings and their opinions without validating them. Right.
Right. Yeah.
So
without like, starting a fight,
I will talk about this dude till the end of my life. But Daryl Davis, the black man who's a musician who befriended and turned several KKK members.
A lot.
Like a lot a of lot like of over them. 100, yeah. I'm pretty sure like is the number now. Like a lot of them. Yeah. By befriending them, not hiding their stuff. not pretending like they don't exist.
Yeah.
Okay. Like, just hiding things in the shadows is exactly why things grow and fester in the shadows. And so when you talk about dangerous ideologies, when you talk about okay, let me give you a perfect example, because this has bothered me forever. We talk about, very much so, we talk about how in ministry we do this for pastors a lot. It was meant to be an encourager, but I think it does more harm than good. We say, if you're not facing opposition, or opposition is a sign that you're on the right track. If people are standing against you, you're on the right. Listen, people stood against Hitler. People stood against Stalin.
Yeah.
People stood against, like,
not for very long, but they did.
Yeah. Like, this is my, and so opposition, the fact that you have opposition is not, in my mind, a sign that you're on the right track. It's just not. I'm sorry, but everyone has someone that disagrees with them. So I'm sorry, you will run into opposition no matter what position or ideology you hold. Well, hold on.
Go ahead. Keep going.
I want to finish this thought process, right? So I think that's done more harm than good, because what it's done, what we kind of do is, by pretending the opposition doesn't exist, or by not engaging with them, we've shown them, oh, well, they have opposition, right? They say, oh, look at them. Yeah. They're against us. That means that we're on the right track. We need to keep going. We need to the reason these things are growing is because they're grassroots movements. And so
organized.
If we're going to make a difference, it needs to start with the way that we talk to and treat each other.
Mm-hmm.
That's where I am. All right. Sorry. Sure.
I think where people get this idea of opposition is Jesus talks about it in the gospel several times, you know, blessed are those, you know, when you were persecuted, you know, for they rejected me, you know, the world would reject you, it rejected me, it's also going to reject you. If you're my disciples, and I go, there's a difference between that and opposition.
Absolutely.
I go back to like there's a difference between having a difference of opinion and unity, being unified. When it says the disciples were all in one accord and in one place, it doesn't mean that they agreed with everything. It meant that they were united into where they were going. They were praying to God together in their understanding of who he was, and they were united in their purpose of coming together, which was to get the Holy Spirit. They did not agree on everything. If you think that the disciples had everything all in line, you have not read the rest of the book of Acts.
Mm-hmm.
And to be quite honest, you're an idiot. Continue to, you know what I mean? Like you're completely taking it out of context.
Paul and Barnabas fully disagreed and ended up going separate. Like they're the most dynamic evangelistic duo. Fought and split.
Everything about the first seven chapters, I'll even go the first 15 chapters.
I would give you the first
Acts,
15.
But the first seven for sure, up until Paul, or I guess eight, up until Paul, and then it kind of follows Paul's journey. But you definitely get this sense of even before they started talking about the Gentile issue, there were major problems, right? Just within this Jewish section of Christianity. There were major issues and disagreements and different things. And so it's like, yeah, if you think the only thing, it just frustrates me when you have all that, even to the point where the reason why they had to appoint the deacons is because people were showing favoritism to the straight Jewish, widows and orphans, instead of all the Jewish widows and orphans that had come from outside, you know, the Greek ones, the outsiders. The ones who didn't, you know, weren't super Jewy. And, well, that sounded really racist.
This is not the episode to say that word.
That sounded really weird. The ones who were not, they didn't speak Hebrew. They weren't traditionally Jewish, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that's a much better way. Thank you for that. Thank you. I'm glad that we dealt with that.
Traditionally, yeah. It came out. I was like, not what I was trying to say.
That's the weakness of this being a conversation
And here's the thing. This is the other issue when we talk about that. The fact that that came out that way, there's nothing wrong with being super Jewy. And that's the point, is that there was nothing wrong with being Greek and not speaking that. You know what I'm saying?
But
it was wrong was the intent that was behind it. People were disparaging these other Jewish people because they were different, because there were disagreements, and because they go, well, you are not following the same rules we're following. Even among this super radicalized, I guess, is a word you could use for Christianity back then. Like super tiny sect or branch of the Jewish faith. They were all together in this, following this one teacher that they believed was the Messiah. And even among that, there was all these splits and differences. And I think that's the same thing when we go back to, what is the mission of the church? How do we focus on the mission of the church? You have to realize that these disagreements and these fights, these scuffles, are going to happen, even among those that aren't super Adventist-y, right? Like, we can't show favoritism. We can't be like, well, your branch of Adventism doesn't agree with my branch of Adventism, therefore we're not united. No, that has nothing to do with two separate issues. The mission of the church, of the Adventist church, the Advent movement, started in 1844 and continued on until 1865 when it became defined. The mission of that has always been to discover the truth from the Bible, to spread that truth, and to continue discovering new things about it, proclaiming the soon coming of Jesus Christ. That's always been our mission from the start. And I feel like we get caught up on these... issues. I'll just call them issues. We get caught up on these issues that have nothing to do with the mission of the church, but we put them as if they are. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Like, we put them up on this pedestal and be like, see, this is so huge, this will stop us from doing the mission of the church. And in my head, I'm like, how?
Mm-hmm.
How is this changing the mission? If anything, it's restricting the mission. Because we can't do it. I mean, that's the thing. We were talking about this. Like, they kept talking about, let's get back to talking about Jesus. Let's get back to talking about Jesus. Once we deal with uniformity and you guys can get in line, let's keep talking about Jesus. And I'm like, yeah, I'd love to start. Let's start talking about Jesus. Can we do that, please?
Well,
that would be very nice.
And this is what kills me about everything that's been happening in our church recently, is the reason that church conferences, unions, divisions, and the GC were created was to help advance mission. In other words, it was in order to help local church and empower local churches to advance mission. And yet, because, the entire rhetoric of the last 5 years, for 5-10 years of people, has not been let's advance mission. It's been let's maintain mission. And that is, like, why are we talking about this? We need to maintain mission. We need to get back on track to doing, you know, to keeping our mission going. No. Advancing mission and maintaining mission are two very, very different things. And advancing mission empowers local churches to do so. Maintaining mission keeps a status quo. And like, what kills me too, I just saw this today, and a friend of mine he's another Adventist podcaster. He's going to hear this most likely, but I'm not going to give him credit because of where he posted this graph. But if he wants me to, I will put it in the episode description. So you know who you are, reach out to me. But he posted a graph today from our annual council archives for the stats presentation. And check this out. On our doctrine on state of the dead, right? So Adventists believe that when you die, you're asleep. You're essentially, you're just not, it's, you don't go anywhere when you die other than wherever your body goes, right? So you just die. So no immediate translation into heaven or hell. No, none of that is immediate, right? So the areas of the world that have voted against women, have voted not against women's ordination, but that are demanding that the rest of the world come back into compliance on women's ordination, over 10% of those populations strongly disagree with our doctrine on state of the dead. Think about that. Like, Tony understands this immediately. Listeners, I want to make sure that you understand what I'm saying by that. Over 10% of some of these divisions that are calling for compliance on women's ordination, over 10% of them are out of, or over 10% of their populations, respectively, are out of compliance in believing in the state of the dead doctrine.
A doctrine.
Huge. Ordination is not a doctrine.
Identity-defining
doctrine. Now, granted, the NAD also falls into that. No, it doesn't. I misread. The NAD doesn't.
Nope.
The NAD absolutely doesn't. We're like 2%. So there you go. Like, take that for what it's like. This whole compliance unity stuff, like, we already operate on the We let people be what they need to be in their spaces as long as they are doing mission. And we allow space for disagreement.
I mean, read the church manual. The church allows polygamy. We support polygamy.
Yeah, we talked about this last episode too.
Official. Yeah. Yeah. Like, just that fact should cause you
it
to
does
stop
not
and be
it
like,
does
what?
Not support polygamy. It allows it, just in case there's someone who didn't hear last episode. It allows it in certain cultures where, like, if someone is converted who has multiple wives, they allow them to continue having those wives.
I mean, it just, yeah. So, again, why? Because that's the mission. Because the details, those details, they wanted to smooth over and they wanted to get them to the right point. But the purpose was to allow the mission of the church to continue. Which I agree with 100%, because here's the ultimate mission of the church. Tying it back in with the shooting. The ultimate mission of the church is to bring healing.
Mm-hmm.
And when I say the church, I mean the Christian church. This is Christ's ministry.
Well, I would
on
say
earth.
It's to be a revelation of Jesus Christ, but yeah.
Which would be healing. Physical, mental, emotional, to bring them closer to God. Every part of that. That is our job, is to bring the comforter. Our job is to open those doors and to share Christ with the world. And when Christ brings it, he brings healing. I recently did a week of prayer at my old academy, and all I talked about the whole time was how God wants to change you. God wants to change your perspective. He wants to change your attitude. He wants to change your past, present, future. And I talked about these various things, and I went through these various things, and every time I went to, why does God want to change it? Not because he just wants to change it because it wants to look different, but because he wants to bring healing. And he can't do that until these things eliminate, things are eliminated, because our perspective and our attitude will allow God to either change our lives or be rejected from bringing healing into us, right? Because if my perspective is off, then I can't see that I need to be changed. And if my attitude is off, then I will be too prideful or too angry or too whatever to allow God to change me. And if my past is holding me back, if my present circumstances are holding me back, if I haven't given my future, God cannot bring healing into my life because I will not let him. And the same thing I see in our church. I'm like, sometimes I think we get so focused on the nitty gritty that we forget the life transformational event. Perfect example. There's a sermon series going on right now in my church. And when the pastor, who's an amazing man and a great, good preacher, a decent preacher, he's not Dwight, but he's good. When he goes up there, when he focuses on the life transformational aspect of the gospel, I am enraptured by his sermons. I'm like, I'm dead on. But the other times he will get into the technical aspects. And he will just get into the, and he gets lost in the forest. And I just, every time I think the same things, I go, dude, where's the transformation? You're talking about a lot of really good, important, you know, Jacob Arminius and all that, but where's the transformation? Where's the point where
Joseph,
God brings healing?
It's Joseph Arminius.
I love Joseph
Arminius.
Congratulations.
We have just successfully started fake news. Because
Joseph
now there's,
Arminius was
there's
a
someone,
comedian.
There's someone
the
going,
world's first.
There's literally someone going, wait a minute, now which is it? Is it Joseph or Jacob? I don't remember.
Joseph was a Greek. everybody. All right.
I agree. You can't see the forest for the trees when you start.
You lose
like
it.
Like this becomes nothing more than shallow legalism.
And again, going back to what I would love if the first church that had gone out, if the church that had the reputation of going out and bringing healing to people was the Seventh-day Adventist Church. If that's what we were known for. And I feel like we haven't garnered that reputation because we haven't allowed God to work on our mission. We've made church about us. We've made church about rules. And we haven't made it about going out and bringing healing to other people and ourselves as well. You know, if all you want to do is heal other people, but you never heal yourself. I mean, you know, a life transformed is what is the greatest evidence for a trans, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
For why God exists. Let me rephrase that. That was badly said.
A life transformed life
is the best evidence that God can transform lives. So, you have to continue to let God in. But I go, that's the point. That's the purpose. That's why all this stuff bothers me so much. And I think that's the reason why. And I think we have such a good mission, especially when we talk about why vote, why get your voice heard, why do all this? Because it's not just to get your voice heard. That's not the point. If that's all it is, go shout, yell on Twitter. You know what I mean? It's not just to get your voice heard, but because we want to be able to make other people's lives better.
Mm-hmm.
And God wants to make your life better. That was his mission, right? That was his purpose of coming here, was to make your life better through various ways, but it was to make your life better, not worse. And I feel like a lot of times we miss that because we're so caught up on these.
Well, I would say better on the eternal scale.
I don't mean like
anecdotally, just anecdotally speaking, like my life was
better,
but
better. Yeah.
My life got way, tougher, more fulfilling. Tougher. My life got worse. Let me just be clear. Not tougher. I guess tougher, but it got worse. I mean, after a while, things kind of evened out. Not even evened out, but things have improved.
It gets a lot tougher. Yeah, no,
but,
for sure.
But I would say more fulfilling, more purposeful, more and better. So better in that way, but not like better. Like, oh, you get a car,
this is not. Let me rephrase. But here's my thing, man.
Yeah, I know what you're saying. I just don't want anyone else to take you out of
context. No, you absolutely clarified. And that's why I bring this. If you have people in your life that care about you to the point where you know you're going to get taken care of, you don't need a car. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like if you have people where they love you to the point that you will find a ride to work every day and a ride to the store and a ride, you don't need a car because you don't need to take care of yourself.
Which is funny to me. You know what that makes me think about? Because I work in college now. College is the closest thing that we have to Acts, to the early Church of Acts.
Oh, yeah.
The amount of resource sharing that happens, the amount of support that happens, the amount of still struggle and fight and, you know, but the fact, like, yeah. I actually think that our Adventist universities might be the closest.
Well, look, the best worshiping experiences I've ever had consistently from Adventist churches were on near or in the air or like on campus.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Of Adventist. And I think that there's something to that, man.
College students get pretty darn resourceful. And on top of that, like they're great about sharing things about like, you know, there are people that never needed a car because they could always borrow mine and they knew they could until I got a stick shift. And then that stopped.
but they knew like if in a pinch you would take care, like people would take care of you. You know what I mean? And yeah, you might not have stuff. You might not have a relationship or you might not have things or you might not even necessarily be quote unquote happier. Your circumstances might be horrible. You might be broke. It's kind of the friends thing, right? You know, your job's a joke. You're broke. Your love life's DOA. But it doesn't matter because we will be there for you. And God is here to make things better. So he might not give you more stuff to make your life better. But he might bring in the right people or give you a purpose or even start training you and putting difficult things in your life to start training you so that you can become a better person. Paul says that. He's, you know, pray when you have persecution. And this is, I know the context of this sounds horrible, like, but be joyful when you have persecution. Because it will bring character and character develops hope. And that means that God is continuing to work with you.
Yep.
That being said, one of the things that I think we should respond to this shooting with as a church is to say, what is our mission? Is our mission about us? Is our mission about a title? Is our mission about making sure that everyone is on the same page and doing the exact same thing? Or is our mission going out and bringing healing?
Mm-hmm.
I don't need somebody to put their hands on me and to give me an official title to go out and to minister to those families, those Jewish families in Pittsburgh who've lost their loved ones.
Yeah.
I don't need an ordination certificate. I don't need a role as a pastor. I don't need a salary as a pastor. I just need Jesus in my life willing me to go do that and to say that this was done by someone who is not a Christ follower. This was done by somebody who is a wolf in sheep's clothing.
Yeah. Well, and
who's taking the name of God in vain.
Well, and to be honest, like, so there are two things I have in response to the shooting today. And there are things I've thought about before and I really should have been putting into action more. But part of this is the first one, I don't really have a lot of friends that fall into this category, so it's been harder for me to act on. The first thing I think we need to be doing is to any of our brothers and sisters who are Jewish, any friends that we have that are Jewish, we need to reach out to them and let them know they're appreciated, they're loved, they're cared for, and show that to them. Not just reach out and tell them, but actually do something actively to appreciate them and show them. But number two, the amount of times I have heard a Christian pastor or a Christian in general sit down with a Jewish, with a priest or rabbi, and just talk about kind of Jewish history, talk about the Torah, talk about the Pentateuch, talk about the Old Testament scriptures in general. I can't help but wonder just how much and unintentionally poor scholarship from Christian pastors has played into anti-Semitic attitudes and treatment. Because like ultimately what we do is we read a lot into Jewish attitudes and Jewish perspectives without ever actually talking
to Jews
about it. Right. And yeah. So we look at Christian literature, we look at Christian scholarship to find out what this still very active worldview and culture actually believed in that time. Yeah. And the amount of times I've heard a Christian pastor say they sat down with a rabbi and asked about these and were corrected on all these misconceptions that we have about early Jewish history, early Christian history even, it baffles
it's
me.
It's very small.
And yeah. I think, like, this is to leaders, this is to anyone who does scholarship, and I haven't really done a lot of investigation on this, so this could be way off base, but I know I've heard it in preaching. 100%, at least I know that I've heard...
at a local pastoral level. Yeah,
on a local pastoral level, unintentional anti-Semitic values come from the pulpit, and that cannot be the case. And I'm to the point, it shouldn't have taken this point, shouldn't have gotten here, and I apologize that it has, but I'm to the point that I really don't want to talk about early Jewish perspectives regarding and how they mix with Christianity without first talking to a Jew or talking to... Or looking at Jewish literature as well as Christian literature. Like, I think we've been incredibly unfair to that portion of our church history because it does mix, right? Like it absolutely does mix right there at the New Testament. But like, I really, really wonder just how much of this has played into it. And I feel terrible about that. I really do. Like so I want to be better about that in my own preaching, in my own work, my own ministry. And I do hope that if there's someone out here who hasn't given that much thought, like I hope you will too, man. If you find out how they keep the Sabbath in Israel, like how they celebrate the Sabbath
so
coming in
man. With a celebrate, with is
they
the key
they
word.
Celebrate, yeah, they yeah. dance, they party, obviously appropriate to Sabbath, but they dance, yeah, they party, it's a celebration,
party.
And yeah. We're like, all right, let's pray to bring in the Sabbath.
Yeah, I can't go to a Vespers. I can't go to like a traditional Adventist Vespers now, like a home Vespers where it's like, and now we will read from Ellen White's Advent Home. I'm like, they set off fireworks.
Yeah, right.
In
like
Jerusalem.
Literally like, Sabbath, like Friday evening is like New Year's Day.
Like, yeah, like it. They're like, break out the punch. Like it's a like we will quietly contemplate. Like, I can't do it. I can't because even like. And the other thing that I go back to when you talk about anti-Semitic, this is the part that always, again, I go back to. If you are a Christ follower, you cannot be anti-Semitic. You can't. You either not a Christ follower or you will not be anti-Semitic.
Jesus was Jewish.
Because Jesus was Jewish.
Jesus was not Adventist. Jesus was not Catholic.
All the disciples were Jewish.
Everyone was Jewish.
Everyone was Jewish until they weren't. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Nobody that we quote from the Bible... other than Luke, but Luke does not speak in the first person. Yeah. Everybody in the Bible is either Jewish or from that, you know, like Babylonian Arabic, which the Babylonians were Iraqi. So, or Iranian in the Persians and Cyrus, like, you know what I mean? Like, there's literally nobody in the Bible that's like, hey, I'm from here. They're either Ethiopian Jew or they're all Jewish. Like, they're Jewish. Yeah. And so to me, when you get anti-Semitic and beyond that, Semitic doesn't just mean Jewish. It means anyone from that area. A Semite is the Middle East.
Yeah.
And so it you know, the hatred and the vitriol that we come against, that only reveals our ignorance. Because if you hate the Jews, you hate the guy you supposedly love.
Yeah.
And that's, again, and beyond the fact that he was like, no, don't hate. I don't hate. Do you get that? There's a great sketch, SNL sketch with Jason Sudeikis as the devil. And they're talking about homosexuality in particular. And so it was this thing where they won't bake the cake because God hates gays. Mm-hmm. And so they brought him in as the devil. And so he's like, hi, the devil. Do you think God hates gays? And he literally, Jason Sudeikis has this amazing, go watch it, YouTube it if you can. He literally goes, no, God doesn't hate the gays. He doesn't hate. That's kind of his thing. I hate the gays because they come in with their little cupcake shops and they're just making neighborhoods happy. I'd worked hard to, you know, bring crack and, you know, hard opioids into that neighborhood. And they just make everything better. I hate them, but I can't stay mad at them. And I go back to Jason Sudeikis, who is not a moral person, at least according to the characters that he plays, has the best perspective of God that I've heard coming out of, you know what I mean?
Like, coming out of mainstream Hollywood stuff.
Yeah, no, that's exactly how God is. He hates God injustice. Hate. He hates, you know what I mean? Like, there are things that he hates, but he's like, that's kind of his thing. And I just go back to, like, why is it so sad that he's the one that's saying that? And instead, just the Christians are the ones with the flyers and the flags and the shooting of the things and the, you know, white people don't shoot white people. They shoot black people. Like, why is it us that are doing this?
Yeah.
And it just goes back to you. It just goes back to, what is your mission? What is your mission? Are you here to bring healing or not?
I'm here to bring the pain.
Are you here to open a can?
Welcome to WWE.
Or are you here to serve? And I think that the example, and this is why I love communion so much. I know this is the Sabbath that everyone leaves. I don't even know. Do they do communion services in non-denominational churches?
I would imagine so, yes.
I wonder if they do it at the level that we do. I mean, I know they obviously
do. They don't do them, foot washing.
Yeah. That's why I love foot washing specifically. I was going to bring that up, so I'm glad you did. I specifically love the foot washing aspect of the Adventist communion service. So for everyone knows, traditionally, according to the manual, if you're in compliance, every 13th Sabbath, you are supposed to do a communion. And you do foot washing and then the juice and the bread. With the foot washing, I love that because it reminds me every time I am meant to serve. That is the ultimate purpose. I am meant to serve, especially as a pastor. Mm-hmm. I'm not meant to preach. I'm not meant to educate. I'm not meant to do any of that. I'm meant to serve. All of that, anything I do falls under the umbrella of service. I'm not here to rule over you. I am here to serve you. I am here to serve you first and be the first one to go and serve.
Yeah.
And I think that's the mentality we have to have. So again, our reaction, how should our reaction be to this shooting of the Jews? Well, vote, yes. Make your voice heard, yes. But first, serve.
Mm-hmm. Find a way go to make a make an active
find
difference
a way to go
for
and
someone.
Serve. Yeah. That might be through voting, but go and make a difference in their lives. If you're in the Pittsburgh area, I don't know why you're listening to us, but if you're in the Pittsburgh area, God bless you. Go, please find a way to do this. Take your weekend, take your Sunday, and go.
Yep. I think that's a good place to kind of end on. So I appreciate this discussion. Neither of us knew it was going to end up here, so that's why I love this.
This took some fun turns.
Yeah, this is an interesting one. So thank you guys for listening to Absurdity. Really appreciate you. We are officially, I found it out today, we have the most episodes of any Adventist podcast currently that I know of.
That's awesome.
So this is exciting.
We're pretty consistent. Every week's
every week tends to catch you up real quick.
Yeah, it really does.
But yeah, which I think is really cool. So we just can't miss weeks anymore to keep that streak.
Now tell your friends.
Unless someone starts releasing two a week, I think we're okay.
We are the USS Enterprise of Adventist podcasts.
If there's someone I don't know of out there that has done more, let me know, and I'll walk back this statement.
But for the moment, we're claiming the belt.
Oh, absolutely. I'm taking this.
Hear us, Absurdity, for we have spoken.
So thank you guys for listening to Absurdity. If you want to subscribe, you can find us on iTunes, Stitcher, any podcatching app that you use, except for Spotify yet. Not yet, anyways, but we will be one of these days.
Soon.
If you want to give any comments, questions, or feedback, you can email me, Ryan180Becker, or you can tweet at me, tweet at Ryan180Becker. Did I just say my email without actually email? Yeah. Email me, Ryan180Becker@gmail.com. Tweet at me, tweet at Tony_Nobile, or just type in, or sorry, A-N-O-B-I-L-E, or just type in the new Dr. Jones.
The new Dr. Jones.
Aha, I'm getting this. And also we do have a Patreon if you want to support this financially. I made it a point to keep that out of the GC episodes. But if you do want to support us financially, I would really appreciate it. Every dollar goes back into this podcast. We actually just bought Tony some new headphones.
So amazing.
Everything, it makes life a lot easier. And so thank you guys so much for your support, for being on this journey with us. We'll see you next week.